You can actually crop them. This is a very different kind of topic to what we were discussing last week, when you grilled me thoroughly on the issue of homosexuality. This is, of course, a completely different issue, but it's still a very contemporary and in some circles very controversial one, which is, what exactly is women's chelek in Talmud Torah? What are women, are there things that women are not meant to learn, and if so, why not? And what should a women's learning syllabus look like in 2011? And this actually is not only a hashkafic, but mainly a halachic question. But you'll see that there's hashkafa coming in here as well, unavoidably. But what I want to do is I want to take you through a whole range of sources, at least 28, 29 sources, where we're going to see some of the background to this issue. Now, Torah, as a hashkafa, as a Jewish hashkafa, Torah is probably the most central hashkafic issue to the Jewish people. Learning Torah, the function of Torah, the purpose of Torah, the idea of Torah. Torah is the way that we access HaKadosh Baruch Hu in a very meaningful way. We don't have prophets, we don't have Nevi'im, who can connect in with, if you like, divine flow. We'll talk about prophecy a little bit more in our Yud Gimel Ikrim class coming up after Hanukkah, because tomorrow is the last one till after Hanukkah. But what we do have is Torah. Torah is the Dvar Hashem. And therefore we see lots of very central words about Torah by Chazal. If you look for a second in source number one, Bereishis Bara Elokim Es HaShamayim Ves HaAretz, that Bereishis, God created the world, is a difficult question what Bereishis means. It doesn't mean in the beginning, because in the beginning would be Bereishona, not Bereishis. Chazal in a drash, look at Rashi brings a chazal in a drash of chazal. Number two, Shidarshu Rabbeinu, the rabbis darshan, in other words, they took the pasuk and they read into it the following homiletic understanding, Bishvil HaTorah, Bereishis, for the purpose of Reishis, God created the world, Shenikres Reishis Darkoi, because the Torah is called Reishis Darkoi, or Bishvil Yisrael, Shenikra Reishis Tuatoi. So the world was created for a purpose. The word Bereishis is not giving you a chronology. It's a little bit linked to what we said last week in the Yud Gimel Ikrim class. The purpose of the story of Bereishis is not to tell you how. The purpose is to tell you why. And the very first word Chazal understood, that was the whole point. Bereishis, for the sake of something. There is a system for which the world was created for us to follow, and that is called Torah. Similarly, when we see in number 3, V'yaru Elokim es kol asher asa v'hinei tov ma'od v'hi erev v'yivoke yom ha-shishi. Chazal wants to know, why does it say Yom Ha-Shishi when it doesn't say Yom Ha-Rishon, Yom Ha-Sheni, Yom Ha-Shlishi? It says Yom Ha-Shishi, okay? Why is it the sixth day? You have to work out between these, you're working out. Okay? Says Rashi again, number 4, Kulan Tzluim V'Omdin, the whole world was hanging, was waiting at Yom Ha-Shishi until the sixth day. What is the sixth day, the famous sixth day? Who's Shishi? Nice try. Shishi B'Sivan, the 6th of Sivan. Hamuchin the Matan Torah, the day of Matan Torah, the 6th of Sivan, etc. And therefore, Torah is the focus and the purpose in many ways of existence from the very beginning of Bereishis through Matan Torah onto our lives today. And our connection with HaKadosh Baruch Hu is very much through Torah. Ahavas Hashem. The nature of bonding to God and connecting with God and loving God and developing a relationship with God to a very large degree through Torah. Look at source number 6 and 7. 6 is the mitzvah of Hashem, li'avai Hashem lokecha, lishmoi b'koloi v'ldakeboi, to stick to God, to bond with God, to love God. The Rambam in his Sefer HaMitzvahs explains how do we do that mitzvah. V'losh nasipri li shineyama v'yahavtei Hashem lokecha. It says you must love God in the Shema. Eini yodea keitzad oyev et hamakom. How can I love God? How do I come to do that? Talmud Lomer, the Torah, then the next pasuk in the Shema says, "Vayu advarim ha'eli asher anochi mitzavcha yom al levavecha." These things will be on your mind. Shemitoich kach, through this, I Torah, atamakir es misha oimer, she'amar rather v'haya ha'olam. You will come to recognize that Kodesh Baruch Hu, and therefore Torah is our direct route to Avas Hashem. We compare in our tefillah. If you look at the Lashon in the tefillah, when we talk about Ahava, we talk about loving God, we immediately start talking about Talmud Torah. This is from Tefillas Aravis in 8, Avas Oilam Beis Yisrael Amcha Ahavta Torah Mitzvois Chukim Mishpanim Salimata. As soon as we talk about Ahava, God's love for us, our love for God, we start talking about Torah. Then, when you actually come onto the issue of women and Torah, if women then have an understanding that their entire connection with Torah is totally peripheral, It's really men that learn Torah. Women's chelik in Torah is, at the most, some people would have heard at school or whatever, because they send their husbands to Kollel or they send their sons to the Beis HaMedrash to learn Torah. That's their chelik in Torah. So then there's a fundamental underlying question, which is, if Torah is so fundamental and women are so peripheral to it, you know, what's going on? There was a woman actually came up to me last week and asked me, and she said, I was told, this is a grown woman, she said she was told when she was growing up that women's only chelik in Olam Haba was through sending their husbands to learn Torah. No other chelik in Olam Haba. No, none of the mitzvahs that you do, none of anything. There is no source that says that. That was just told to her in high school, no doubt to persuade her to marry a Carlisle guy. But the point is, what we need to get to the bottom of what really is going on with Talmud Torah, and how it connects with, specifically in this case, with women. Now, the starting point of this discussion is the understanding that there are multiple mitzvahs of Talmud Torah in the Chumash. There is not just one. And that is the first fundamental point which most people fail to understand at the very beginning. There is a mitzvah, the limadatim or tamis b'neichem, you will teach them to your children, or you will see your sons. And there's a separate mitzvah, the shinan tam levanecha. Both of them are in the Shema, yeah? But they're two different mitzvahs. And there's another mitzvah, a third mitzvah, which is at the very end, which is one which you may not have come across. We're going to split this discussion for the next just under an hour into these three mitzvahs. Most of the discussion will be on the first one, because that's where all the action is. But then we need to talk about the shinan tam levanecha and the other one as well, the third one as well. Okay? So let's go. Yes, there's the limat. Well, we're going to see them now. And I'll tell you, I will leave number 10 and I'll tell you the others and then we'll go back. Okay? Number 10 is the first of them, which is a pasuk in the Shema in Dvarim. Vilimadatem otam. It's going to be quite textual today, so we have to focus on the text. Vilimadatem otam is b'neichem. You will teach them to your b'neichem. Now, what does b'neichem mean? Children. Pashtas, children. Nedaber bam, to speak about them. B'shiftecha b'veisecha, when you sit in your home. U'velechtecha v'derech, when you walk on the way. B'shochbecha, when you sit down. Or when you lie down. U'vekumecha, when you get up. Now, the Chazal understood that the mitzvah v'limadetem asamis b'nechen, you will teach them to your children, is the mitzvah of teaching Torah to children. The second pasuk, which Beth has asked me to run through them, I will point out to you, if you look in source number 24, you'll see that there is a pasuk, v'shinantam levanecha, v'divarta bom b'shitcha b'veitecha v'lentecha v'derecha v'shokcha v'mecha. Very similar to the first one, because it talks about teaching them when you're out, when you're in, when you're lying down, when you're getting up. But there it doesn't say v'limadetem, it says v'shinantam. The third pasuk is in number 28, which is also in Dvarim, where it says, "Raki shamelecha ushmor nafshecha." Be very careful. Pen tishkach et dvarim asher ra'u einecha. Don't forget the things which your eyes saw. Pen yisuru milavavcha, in case you take out from your mind, kol yimei chayecha, all your days of your life. V'hodatam levanecha, and you will make these things known to your children, ulevnei vanecha, and to your children's children. Yom Hashem Amarta Lefnei Hashem Lakecha B'chayiv, the day that we stood, that you stood in front of God at Mount Sinai, etc., etc., etc. So again, these are three mitzvahs to teach your children: v'limadetem otam, v'shinantam levanecha, and here v'hodatam, you will tell them levanecha to your children or levnei vanecha. Now, the starting point in the Gemara for the discussion about women and Talmud Torah is in number 11, because the Gemara picks up the pasuk of v'limadetem, okay, and says like this. The ihu minalan deloy mechayva lemelif nasha. How do we know that a woman is not obligated to teach herself Torah? Not chayev. No one at this stage is talking about permission. They're talking about obligation. Okay? Because the pasuk says this siv v'limadetam. V'limadetam. It says, what does it mean with a yud and without a yud? The word in the Torah, of course, is written without vowels. And a word which is written without vowels could be pronounced or read in many different ways. It's only through the Torah Shebaal Peh that we know how to actually vocalize the words. And we talked about this when we talked about oral law way back at the beginning. We said certain words, only through Torah Shebaal Peh do you have any clue what they mean. So here also, the Gemara is focusing on the fact that you could read it, and you shall teach, or and you shall learn. Now obviously, the pshat in the pasuk is you will teach them to your children. But the drash in the pasuk is you will learn. Okay, so teaching and learning are connected. So women are not obligated to learn for themselves because they're not obligated to teach. How so? Kasha acherim mitzuvim lelamdo. Anyone that someone is obligated to teach, Mitzvah lelamed esatzmo is obligated to teach themselves. So kol she'ein acherim mitzvah lelamdei, ein mitzvah lelamed esatzmo. In other words, the obligation to learn Torah and the obligation to teach Torah are connected. Anyone who is included in the obligation to have Torah taught to them, they are obligated to learn. And everybody who is not included in the obligation to have Torah taught to them, or everyone who is not part of this system, is not obligated to learn. Fine. So there's a connection between learning and teaching. So I just finished this source. And therefore the Gemara ends, so women are not obligated to learn, because women are not obligated to be taught. How do I know indeed that women are not obligated to be taught Torah, that women are not included in you shall teach them to your children? Says the Pasuk, Da'amakra, v'limadetem osam es b'neichem. You will teach them to your sons, v'loi b'noiseichem, and not to your daughters. Now, there's a two-stage process here. Women are not obligated, we are not obligated to teach women Torah because the Pasuk says you will teach it to your sons and not to your daughters. And because they are not included in that pool of people who have to be taught, therefore they are themselves not included in the obligation to learn Torah for themselves. Fine. The connection between teaching and learning is from the fact that v'limadetem could be read and you shall teach, or and you shall learn. And the exclusion, or the exemption I should say, from women's involvement in Torah is from the word b'neichem. Now, in case you're about to ask this question, the first point is, of course, why should b'neichem mean sons? Why should it not mean children? And this is a much bigger question, which all the way through Chumash, you find the word b'neichem used, and sometimes it means sons, and sometimes it means children. It's not just here. For example, the whole concept that women are excluded from the restrictions on Kohanim, that a male Kohen is not allowed to touch a dead body, to go into a graveyard, etc., etc., whereas a female Bat Kohen is allowed to do that. How do we know that? Because it says in the restrictions on Kohanim, Daber el Bnei Aaron, speak to the Bnei Aaron. Now, who are the Bnei Aaron? They are the sons of Aaron. How do I know it's not everybody? Maybe it's sons and daughters. Here it means Bnei. Now, you could argue that's different, because Aaron only had boys. He didn't have any girls, and therefore it's obviously the children mean the boys. But still, Bnei Aaron doesn't have to mean necessarily the boys. And there are other areas as well. The mitzvah to do smicha on a korban is learned specifically that it only applies to men, because it says Bnei Yisrael, but not Bnei Yisrael. Now, Bnei Yisrael, my goodness, Bnei Yisrael, doesn't that mean everybody? The answer is, it doesn't. And the Malbim goes through a whole analysis, which is beyond the scope of today's class, to try to find some sense of logic as to when Chazal say Bneichem means everybody, and when Chazal say Bneichem means only sons. For example, we will see later on in this year that the Shinantam Levanecha, Chazal did not exclude women from that, and they understand that to mean everybody. And not just your children, but your Talmidim. It's very inclusive. And therefore, understanding, if you like, the nanotechnology of the way that Chazal read words is an important part of this, but is not for today's shir. Just take it as read for now, and this is clear, and halakhically this is not subject to debate, that the mitzvah of Limanatem and Thomas Benechem means only boys and not girls. Now that, of course, will not exclude women and will not prevent women from learning Torah, but that will exempt women from learning Torah and will exempt men from teaching them Torah. Okay? Yes.
How do they, like, in the context of this subject, find that it's talking about Talmud Torah? Because the rest of it is talking about the Shema.
The Shema. Talking about the Shema later. Because the Chazal, it's a good question. I was also thinking that. Chazal understand that the second part is talking about the Shema, the bit that says "Uvelechta chavader," because it says "Vahayu hadvarim ha'ele, asher anochi mitzavcha yom al levavecha." Vahayu hadvarim ha'ele is the Shema, because it's talking about these words of the Shema, and that's going on. But the words in the middle, you will teach them to your children when you're on the road and when you're etc. etc. For example, "Beshifta chavaveisech" or "Uvelechta chavaderech" have got nothing to do with the Shema. I've got to do with the Shema. That's the evening Shema and the morning Shema. But there's no halacha of Shema when you're in the house or when you're out on a journey. The understanding is that this pasuk is talking about two separate things. It's talking on the one hand about the obligations of Shema in the morning and the evening, and on the other hand, the obligation of Talmud Torah the whole time. The same thing with the Shinan Sam Vanecha, which also starts to talk about things to do with the Shema as well. But that, again, that is how exactly Chazal learned the Psukim to understand that this is talking about this. is a good question, which is a pashanut question, is a different question. But for now, it's uncontroversial. Everybody agrees this is talking about Talmud Torah. Everybody agrees this is exempting women. Okay? So that can be our starting point. But I agree with you, you need to investigate exactly how the two work. You can look at the Mephorshim there and see how they work and why they're talking about what they're talking about. Yes?
And for clarification purposes, if a woman is exempt to be taught and to learn Torah, is she also exempt from teaching Torah?
Yes.
In the sense that...
Yes. Yes. They go together, and that's the next part of the Gemara which I didn't bring you. Okay. Number 12. Now, this by no means is the whole story. We're only just at the very, very beginning of a discussion. Now, people begin to start carving things out of that. And the Shulchan Aruch, and this is brought down later by the Shulchan Aruch HaRav, which is a little bit later, says, Mikol Mokom, of course, number 12, Gam HaNashim Chayvas Lilmoid Halachas HaTzrichas Lehem Leida Oisam. Of course, women are obligated to learn the halachas of how to keep the mitzvahs that they have to keep. And of course, women have to keep 99.5% of all the same mitzvahs the men have to keep. But kol mitzvahs aseh she'ein hazman grama, any mitzvah, positive mitzvah, which is not time-bound, which is pretty much every one, you know, there are 248 positive mitzvahs, and only four or five of them are time-bound. But kol mitzvahs lois aseh, and of course, every negative mitzvah, shel Torah, which is in the Torah, shel divrei sefer nevi derabbanan, etc. Now, he goes on to say, of course, women are obligated to learn the halacha. But understand that that is not an exercise in Talmud Torah. When you're learning the halachas of how to keep Shabbos, that's not called Talmud Torah. That's called keeping Shabbos. You need to keep Shabbos, therefore you need to know what to do. Talmud Torah, connected with Talmud Torah, is a much more expansive exercise of connecting with Torah, connecting with God through Torah. So even though women have to learn Hilchos Shabbos, that's not really called learning Torah, which is why this carve-out is there. But in practical terms, of course, this means that women are practically chayav to learn the entire lives, because you could spend your entire lives learning halacha if you wanted to. So a woman could learn from dawn till dusk every day and be within source number 12 of just learning halacha that they need to know. But of course, that doesn't really address the question. The question is, why are women not learning Gemara and men are learning Gemara, etc., etc.? And by the way, the question is the other way. Why are men not learning halacha when they're meant to be? That's another good question, which is not for now. Yes?
We'll get to that.
Absolutely. That is the third mitzvah of Talmud Torah. Fine. But absolutely yes, 100% no question. The next part of the equation is like this. So far we've learned quite clearly women are exempt from this mitzvah of Talmud Torah, from both learning and from being taught and from teaching, but they are obligated to learn the halacha that they have to learn. Look at number 13. It says the Rambam, Noshim Paturim mit Talmud Torah. Women are exempt from Talmud Torah. And by the way, this is very interesting. This is the very first halacha that the Rambam brings in Hilchos Talmud Torah, which is a funny thing to start with. You would have thought that he would start like he starts everything else with, there is a mitzvah in the Torah to learn Torah. Quote, posuk, source text, shene'emar, la 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 la. He doesn't start that. He starts with his exemption of women. And it's very interesting because many of them, unfortunately, want to know why the Rambam is doing this. And one of the answers they give is that he's talking about a very specific type of Torah. He wants you to understand that I'm talking about Velimadatem, which is a specific type of Torah, and I'm not talking about any other type of Torah right now. Have a look what it says. Nashim Paturim Maturim Talmud Torah, Aval Cotton, Oviv, Chayav Lalamdo Torah, but a little child, because it wasn't just women there, it was Nashim and Ketanim, etc., etc. A child, a father, is obligated to teach Torah. Shene Emar, Vilimadatim Otam Esbenechem, Ledaberbam. The Eina Aisha Chayevet Lalamed Esbena, this is your question, a woman is not obligated to teach her son. Shekol Shechayav Lilmod, anyone who is obligated to learn, Chayav Lalamed, is obligated to teach. It's like a three-stage chain. There's being taught, there's learning, and there's teaching other people. Women are exempt on each level of that. But again, nobody has said anything about exclusion or prohibition. They've just been talking about exemption. The Gemara in Sota wants to talk about a special schus of Torah that will protect a person from the Sota waters. Okay? Sota waters. Okay? It's different, even though they are carbonated. Okay? But... Sorry, I couldn't resist that. Okay, when I said that to one of my friends, he retaliated immediately with, "Why don't they inject the women with sota, water, which has Hashem's name in it. Why don't they inject that into the women? Because you can never take God's name in vain. Okay? So this is what British people do to pass a long winter evening. You know, they come up with these puns, but only once upon a time. Okay, fine. Let's go weiter. Says the Gemara in Sota like this. Ilema schus de Torah. Is it the schus of Torah which protects women in the Sota situation? Maybe it's a special schus that she has Torah. But ha'ena mitzvah v'oitah. She is not commanded to learn Torah. The Gemara has a problem. How can women have a schus of Torah when they're not commanded to learn Torah? And the Gemara answers, the Ka'amras, Eina Mitzvah Va'isa, Nai de Pekud Eloi Mifkada, okay, she is not obligated to learn Torah, Be'igra, but there is a schus, she has a schus in this mitzvah. What is the schus? Be'igra de Makrin Umasnim Benayhu, that they teach, or they send their children to learn Mishnah and to learn Chumash, V'nasron lehu legavraiho, and they wait patiently for their husbands at the asami bei midrash until they come home from the Beis HaMidrash. This source is emblazoned over the doors in the Beis Yaakov schools, as it were, which is that this is the source of the women in Torah, which is the source is that they send their children to the Beis HaMidrash and they send their husbands to the Beis HaMidrash. And the Gemara wants to know what is there for the source of women v'limaritim otam. This is the source in v'limaritim otam. Now, the reason the Gemara assumes that there can be less of a schus is because women are not commanded, and therefore even if they wish to do it, the doing it will be a mitzvah, will be a lower level mitzvah, as we're going to see right now. Anytime you volunteer to do a mitzvah, it doesn't have the same schus, it doesn't have the same merit as if you're commanded to the mitzvah. We'll talk about why that is in a few minutes. And therefore the Gemara is searching around to find a way that the women are part of the mitzvah, the chiyuv, the obligation of Talmud Torah, and of course it's not them, but it is vicarious through their husbands and children. Yes. It means that in certain situations, a woman who would drink the sota waters wouldn't die straight away. She would have years to live before she eventually died. And certain things could prevent that death kicking in right away. One of them was the schus of Torah. And once the Gemara has said that the schus of Torah will protect this woman, the Gemara then wants to know how, because the women are not obligated to Torah, so where does she have the schus from?
If she didn't die right away, wouldn't they say that she didn't?
Correct.
And then she would have a child, and then like.
Okay, fine. So you're asking a whole question of how the sota system works.
Okay, fine.
All the Gemaras there are talking about this. That's the whole discussion of the Gemara there. I'm just extracting the bit that talks about Talmud Torah, so we can look at that in this context. Yes.
Just a clarification.
It means that if you're let's learn 15, and then I'll answer your question. The Rambam says like this: Isha shalamda Torah, yesh la schar. A woman who learns Torah has a reward, and let's, for the present purposes, learn schus and schar as basically the same thing. I think they are basically the same thing here. I mean, in other words, a reward, some kind of spiritual benefit from having performed this mitzvah. If a woman learns Torah, she definitely gets a reward, a schar. In other words, it's not a spiritually neutral exercise; it's a spiritually positive exercise. One second. Aval einu kaschar ha'ish. But it is not the same as the schar of a man. Why? Because she is not commanded. And any time you volunteer to do something which you're not commanded in, okay, la'asois, to do it, it's not the same as someone who was commanded to do it. Rather, it is less. The schar is less. And there are debates as to why that is. There are a number of hashkafic approaches to that. One classic one is that if you have an obligation to do something, you have a yetzahara not to do it. Because if God tells you to do it, you immediately kick back and say, why should I do it? Whereas if you volunteer to do something, it was neutral in the first place, and therefore, well, great, you volunteered to do it. There was no yetzahara against it, so you don't expect such a big deal. Because the reward for a mitzvah is always commensurate with the struggle that you have in doing that mitzvah. A mitzvah you don't struggle with, you don't get much reward for. Which is why, as I think I mentioned to you once before, when you all leave this room and don't murder anyone on the way home, so you all fulfilled one of the Ten Commandments all the way home, that you didn't murder anybody. But your reward for that mitzvah in Olam Haba will be minuscule, because you have no struggle with that mitzvah, and therefore the reward is irrelevant. So too here, if you don't struggle with the chiyuv, then your reward is less. So the schus, or the schar, or the merit, or the spiritual benefit from having done that mitzvah is significantly less than the Rambam with women, because they're not obligated. By the way, this is not just about men and women. If a man does a mitzvah that he's not obligated to do, he also gets a lesser schar than someone who is obligated to do that mitzvah. And it goes across the board. This certainly will be true of all mitzvahs that women do, which they're not obligated to, which are very few. Again, one of the big misnomers is that somehow men are obligated in everything and women are pretty much exempt from everything. Somebody asked me a question. Well, a teacher in a school was teaching a class in benching and said that when there are three men and they make a zimun, the women are obligated halachically to be part of the zimun, to answer to the zimun. In other words, if they don't answer, it's awesome. And he said the women in his class were amazed by this. It's all from girls. They grew up. They didn't think they had anything to do with zimun. What's it got to do with us? It's a man's mitzvah. And the reason they thought that is because they have some underlying assumption that mitzvahs are men's mitzvahs, and that women, I don't know, they tag along somehow. It's just not true. You can count on one hand the number of mitzvahs in the Torah that women are exempt from, out of thousands of mitzvahs. Yeah? And even then, women take part in many of them, but okay, they'll get a lesser scar. They go to hear the shofar, you go to shul to hear the shofar, I go to shul to hear the shofar. You're exempt, I'm obligated, you get a scar, I get a scar, but my scar is bigger than your scar. But the truth is, it makes no difference, because everyone's scar is different anyway. Once you actually start talking about the real you and the real scar and the real olam haba, then nobody knows what any of that means. Because only an individual balance, the Rambam says in Hilchos Teshuva, for one individual, one mitzvah may have enormous scar, and another person may have tiny scar. So lesser and more is, of course, just a generalization, but on an individual level, then who knows where, you know, who's where.
But that's the definition of scar.
Yes. Yes, but when it mentioned the word Torah, the Gemara was concerned that the schus of someone who is volunteering to learn Torah with no mitzvah wouldn't really be a schus that could protect them, because it's like, it's weak. Therefore, they must be connected in some way with the obligation of Talmud Torah. And therefore, it was looking to try and find how women are connected with the obligation of Talmud Torah, and therefore, it talked about the husband, talked about the children, etc., etc.
It's not just that a woman's car is less than a man's, it's negligible.
Look, I don't know what these qualitative things mean. For example, the quantitative things mean, rather. The Rambam says that if a non-Jew decides to do a mitzvah, he's back to shake a lulav on Sukkot. He also gets a schar. What? Much less. You know, he's not really part of the system. It's like, you know, another way of looking at it is either part of the system or you're not part of the system. If you're obligated by a Kodesh Baruch Hu to do a mitzvah, then you're like part of the system. Like the sun goes up in the morning because it's has a chiyuv to go up, because God says go up. And the trees grow because God says grow. So you eat matzah because God says eat matzah. But if you shake a lulav because God said do what you like, yeah, and you decided to shake a lulav, well, that's nice. But you're not in the groove, you know? You're not in the flow. You're not part of the system. You're just kind of waving from the outside saying, I'd like a bit of that too. So, okay, in those mitzvahs. By the way, most positive mitzvahs, women are obligated in the same way as men, for all sorts of reasons. Shabbos, the positive mitzvahs of Shabbos, the positive mitzvahs of Pesach, etc., etc. Yom Kippur, it's only a few of them that they're not obligated. Yes?
Rabbi, I'm just confused, because I feel like logically it should be the opposite.
Yes, and the Gemara discusses that. And the Gemara also says you would have thought that logically it should be the opposite, that someone who volunteers gets a higher level of reward than somebody who is obligated. Yeah, and the Gemara has a whole discussion on that and actually flips it and says, yes, even though you would have thought that, actually when you take into account the whole Yetzer Hara issue, which kicks in quite hard, when the first thing, people can be quite happy about not doing something until someone tells them to do it, and then they say, why should I do that? Yeah, before you told them to do it, they didn't even think about it. They go, why? What's the problem? So there's a Yetzer Hara angle. And there's also this angle of being a mitzvah. Being a mitzvah, being commanded, means that, like, I'm part of the way it's meant to be. And therefore, I the scar is much more. Being a volunteer is like your decision. You decided that was good for your neshama. As opposed to God, think about it this way. If you decide what's good for your neshama, and I just borrow who decides what's good for your neshama, which do you think is more powerful?
No, for sure.
So if you think of it that way,
but then
you understand.
It's
nothing to do with chumras.
No,
chumras work in an entirely different way.
Chumras. No.
A chumra, a stricture, something being strict. They're taking on an extra level of stricture.
Like, rather off topic, but if you're doing something that you're not obligated to do, but you're
well,
it's
not.
Like, what's the point?
It's not so straightforward, because
because there is, when you keep a chumrah for the right reasons,
yeah,
and it's not always kept for the right reasons, it is a mitzvah. It's a mitzvah of Yiras Hashem. Because there's a mitzvah to go above and beyond because of the fear of transgression, which, and you're fulfilling a mitzvah, the right of Yiras Hashem when you keep a chumrah for the right reasons. So it's not as if it's completely mitzvah neutral to do a chumrah. It's not. But if you do it, of course, for the wrong reasons, then it's all very negative. But chumras for the right reasons are very, very positive. It's much more positive than volunteering entirely for a mitzvah that you're not part of at all. Yes?
I'm thinking that if a woman takes on a mitzvah that she isn't obligated to do, and then she does it enough times and she is obligated to do it.
That won't work. She won't be obligated. However many times she does it. Even if she does it 100 times, she won't be obligated. She may have taken a personal neder. She may have taken a personal vow to do it. If a woman says, I take a vow that I will shake lulav every year from now to the rest of my life, she has to shake lulav every year, but she didn't keep the mitzvah of lulav, she kept the mitzvah of keeping a vow.
Okay, but I heard that the Rashi's daughters put on tefillin.
There's no evidence for that. I spoke to people who researched Rashi's life and Rashi's daughter's life, and there's no evidence for that. But even if they did, so what?
No, but what if you take it on three times and then it becomes an obligation?
It becomes a neder. But your neder is not the same as the mitzvah. I can make a neder to eat chocolate every morning for the next 6 weeks.
Mm-hmm.
And if I do that, I will be keeping my vow. But it's not the mitzvah. The mitzvah is not to break the vow.
No, I just thought it's maybe, okay.
No, Rashi, and by the way, the question, you raised a good question, which is tefillin. Women are obligated from a half a dozen mitzvahs. Sorry, women are exempted from a half a dozen mitzvahs because they're positive time bound mitzvahs. And I'm not getting into now why is a positive time bound mitzvah not binding on women. I'm not getting into that. But if you count them, you think about them, it's basically tzitzis, tefillin, sukkah, lulav, shofar. Minyan's all drabon. I'm talking about Krishma. It's hard to think of really any others. Torah mitzvahs, which are positive, and going alila regal, going to the Beit HaMikdash every yontif. It's hard to think of any, you know, many more. When you compare that with, there are 248 positive mitzvahs, and we found kind of seven, maybe there's another couple that you could think of. But there's not many. Of all of those mitzvahs, women are entirely welcome to do them, apart from citizens filling, for different reasons. The women, no, nothing to do with sneers at all. Nothing to do with sneers. Nothing to do with sneers. Okay, it's a whole bunch of different discussions, which is not for now, but it's nothing to do with sneers. There's nothing not so new about where he's filling.
I
want to someone. It's not confessional time. Okay, we can do that later on. I'll put a little grill up and we can have a proper discussion about it. Okay, fine. Look at number 16. Now, this is when things start getting hot. Because up until now, fine, so women want to learn this particular aspect of Torah, that's very nice. But there's nothing, there's no reason why it shouldn't. So now comes along the Gemara and says like this. In Yesh, this is from the Sota issue as well. In Yesh Ratzkus, if the woman has a skus, Haitha Toilila, then the waters will not take immediate effect. Yesh skus Toile Shana Achas, there is some merit that will allow the woman to survive another year. The Yesh Shkos Tolish Shnei Shanim, or 2 years. The Yesh Shkos, and maybe even 3 years. And Torah was part of that discussion. Mikan, because of this, Oimer Ben Azai came along and said, Chayev Adam Lilmos Es Bitoi Torah. Oh, a man is therefore obligated, says Ben Azai, to teach his daughter Torah. She'im Tishte, because then if she drinks, Teda, she'll know she has schus toilela, that the reason that she is not dying is not because the whole thing's nonsense and it doesn't work, but it's because she has a schus, and therefore he's saying you have to teach your daughter's Torah. Now, put aside the social issue, because it's going to distract us if we get too much into it. But Ben Azai says, you must teach your daughter's Torah. Rabbi Eliezer then turns around and says, no. Kol hamalamed bitay Torah, anyone who teaches his daughter Torah, ke'ila lomda tiflut, it's as if he taught her nonsense. And there are different understandings of what tiflut means, but the Rambam explains on the Mishnah here, inyanu ke'ila lomda tiflut, v'hu hashav, it's nonsense, v'divrei hevel, and nothingness. In other words, if you teach your daughter Torah, it's as if you taught her nothingness, says Rabbi Eliezer.
And therefore you mustn't teach her, she won't understand it. We'll see how the Mephoshim understand that expression. Rashi even says it's as if you're teaching good, she's going to end up doing Averas because a little bit of knowledge can be very dangerous, etc. Rabbi Eliezer clearly takes a very negative view of teaching women Torah. However, you have to understand that that context of that Gemara is the negative view on teaching anybody Torah who is going to misuse or abuse it. So if you look in number 17, it says the Gemara is talking Heichi Dami Rosha Orem. What is the case of a sly evil person? Nothing to do with women now at all. It's talking about men. So Ula Oimer Zeh Shekara V'Shana V'Loi Shimash Tamid Chachamim. The same daf of Gemara is saying this is somebody who learned. He learned Pesukim. He learned Chumash V'Shana. He learned Mishnah V'Loi Shimash Tamid Chachamim. But he never went through a process of Shimush. Shimush is where you sit and you learn the practical way that Torah works. You lack an apprenticeship with a Talmud Chacham. In other words, Gemara is saying that a little bit of knowledge, or even quite a lot of knowledge, but not total knowledge, can be a very dangerous thing in anybody. And the context of this daf of Gemara is people who it's dangerous to teach Torah to. Men who it's dangerous to teach Torah to, women who it's dangerous to teach Torah to, etc. Therefore, the feeling coming out of this Gemara, the understanding of this Gemara is there are basically two shittas. Rabbi Eliezer says not only are women exempt from learning Torah, but I as a man have a prohibition. I'm not allowed to teach my daughter Torah. Let's keep it as daughters for now. And Ben Azai says, no, the Hefech, on the contrary, I have an obligation to teach my daughter Torah. And therefore is a Shiloh now. Who are we going to Paskin like? Are we going to Paskin like Rabbi Eliezer, in which case women will not only be exempt, but effectively excluded from learning Torah, because if there's no one to teach them, how are they going to learn? Yeah? Or are we going to pass it like Ben Azai, in which case women are going to remain exempt, but totally welcome if they wish to, and I will teach them if they want to learn? That's the question we're going to have to ask now. Yes?
But the motivation for this is more because you wouldn't be able to teach your daughter a whole lot of Torah, therefore she's only learning a little Torah, therefore she might easily misuse it.
Yes.
Okay.
Yes. Now, the Rambam, this is a very important source in number 18. The Rambam paskens the halacha, and he paskens like Rabbi Eliezer. And this basically is the wording of the Shulchan Aruch as well. Look at it very carefully. Isha, shelamda Torah, a woman who learns Torah, yesh la schar, she gets a reward. Aval einik haschar ha'ish, but not the same as the man's reward. Why? Mitnei sheloi nistaveh, because she is not obligated. V'kol ha'oise davar she'enu mitzuva alav, and anyone who does something which they're not obligated to do, la'asoisai, ein schar haschar ha'mitzuva, is not the same as the schar of someone who's obligated to she'asa, who did it, and a pachas in the minute. We learned that already in number 15. The afal pishu yesh lo schar, even though a woman has merit for learning Torah, tzivu chachamim, the rabbis commanded, shaloi yilmad adam es bitoi Torah, that a person should not, lo yilamed adam et bitoi Torah, should not ever teach his daughter Torah. Mipnei, look at this carefully, I put it in bold. Sheroiv hanashim, the majority of women, ein dasam muchvenes lehis lamed. Their knowledge is not attuned for learning. Elahein moitzios divrei Torah ledivrei havai. They will end up converting or changing or bringing those divrei Torah into divrei nonsense. Lefianias dasam, because of their lack of knowledge. Amru Chachamim, and therefore the rabbi said, Kol ha-malamed is bitay Torah ki'ilu malamda tiflis. Anyone who teaches his daughter Torah, it's as if he taught her nonsense. Ah, the ma dvarim amurim, what does this apply to? B'tor shebal peh. That's only the oral law. Aval Torah shebichtav, but the written law, lo yilamed osah, he still shouldn't teach it to her. B'chadchila, ideally, ve'im lamda, but if he did teach it to her, it's not as if he taught her nonsense. It's that dangerous. But you still shouldn't do it. The Rambam's psak is like Rebbe Eliezer, and it comes out two things. Don't teach your daughters oral law. And if you teach your daughters oral law, which would include Mishnah and Gemara, if you teach your daughters oral law, it's dangerous. It's as if you taught them nonsense. Classic like Rebbe Eliezer, and not Ben Abba. Written law, Chumash, Meforshim. Don't teach your daughters Meforshim either. Don't teach them Chumash. But if you did teach them Chumash, you didn't do that much damage. It's not the end of the world. It's not like the halachic system where they're going to take it and apply it. What can you do with a bad pshat and rashi? Yeah? So you've got a bad pshat and rashi. It's not the end of the world. But you understood the halacha wrong, you'll end up completely messing up, breaking Shabbos, you know, etc., etc. That basically is the same language of the Shulchan Aruch. that's brought down in Shulchan Aruch. And the question is, what are we going to do with that? What are we going to do with that? And one of the biggest kashas on the Rambam is that people have been teaching their daughters Torah and their women Torah consistently throughout history. And how have they been doing this if it's Osa? And there are many examples. One of the most conspicuous examples, of course, is Bruria. Bruria is a woman, the wife of Rabbi Meir, and the daughter of of Rabbi Hanina ben Saradion, and she was a Talmid Chacham of immense proportions. In fact, she was one of the Tanaim. There are still situations in the Tanaimic literature, like number 19, where there's a machlokes between Bruria and other Tanaim, and we paskin like Bruria, because she was a Talmid Chacham of immense proportion. We'll see more about her in a minute. How could she have learned Torah? How could Rabbi Elezer, Rabbi Hananya ben Saravian, teach his daughter Torah? Obviously, someone taught her. She didn't just learn it all herself. There were no books in those days. The only way you can learn Torah is by being part of a system of learning Torah from a Rebbe. Someone obviously taught her Torah. What's more, there have been people throughout history. In the Middle Ages, in Baghdad, there was one of the Rishonim whose daughter was such a Talmid Chacham. She used to teach the yeshiva guys Torah from behind the machitza. Because she was not Tanur of her to teach them directly, but she was the biggest Talmid Chacham in the place. So she used to teach them Torah. Many people bring down examples of their mothers or grandmothers who were very big Talmid Chachamim, and they do lots of Torah. How could they all be doing this? Were they all learning on the sly? Was there some kind of sneaky women's based medrash going on throughout the ages? And what do they do with this sack of the Rambam? Yes. What are you after?
No, there were just dictionaries on top of the.
Okay, don't worry about it. Yeah, carry on. So that's one way of learning it is that it's all about fathers and daughters. But it doesn't sound like that from the Rambam, because the Rambam doesn't talk about fathers and daughters, it talks about women and men. He doesn't say there's a problem of getting your daughter to learn Torah. There's a problem of teaching women Torah. What does he say? Tzivu chachamim, what was his lashon? Tzivu chachamim shelo yelamed adam es bita. He says daughter. Bitmei sheroi panasho. Okay, so he says daughter. So you want to restrict the whole halacha. What? But then he says, "Mipnei sheroiv nashim ein adas luchavenes liislamei." I hear what you're saying, and there are people that say that. There are people that say that this is specifically a mission between a father and a daughter. But if it's not my daughter, yeah. But it's really funny because that's not the way the poskim have usually learned that. When you speak to people about that, the way this is understood is as being there is someone who says this. I must find out who it is. I read it once. I must find out who that is that says that. But that's not the way that the people usually understand this throughout the ages.
Someone understands
me
that if a woman seeks it out.
Oh, we'll get to that. We'll get to that in a few minutes. Now, yes. Oh, that's clearly not the case. And this is the beginning of the solution rather than the problem, if you like. Although it's a little bit biased of me to put it that way. Given that I'm teaching in a women's learning institution, which from the Rambam seems to be Osa. And by the way, every Beis Yaakov in the world is Osa according to this Rambam. Because they all teach Chumash Rashi. Apart from, you know, there are certain Hasidim who don't teach their girls Torah Bichlal at all. They won't teach them how to read Hebrew. They won't teach them from a Sefer. And they want to be Mekayim this Rambam. But every Beis Yaakov in the world is doing an Aveira according to this Rambam. We have to work out what's going on. But the Rambam explicitly says, when he talks in Hilchos Yisrael HaTorah, and I probably should have put this source on the sheet, when he talks about the concepts of learning as opposed to Torah metaphysics, he says, only some people can learn metaphysics because only some people have the philosophical understanding. But Torah, he says, Gemara, everybody can learn Gemara, he says. Ish, Isha, Godel, Cotton, etc., etc. He says, everybody, nobody should feel that they don't have the potential to be able to learn Torah. It's very clear from the Rambam that the Rambam has there, in Yisrael Torah, the Rambam has no comment upon the intrinsic brain power of women, which would be ridiculous. Because, you know, the Matthias is that, of course, people are educated to the level of education. It's not some kind of genetic built-in, like, gene that men are clever and women are thick. Yeah? I mean, you know, that you can't say. There have been people who say, oh, the Rambam is misogynist and he's going against women and he's putting women down. He's not doing anything like that. He's saying that women do not have the skill set to
to be able to learn Torah. Now, you may come along and say, what if they do have the skill set? What's going to be then? So we'll get to that in a minute. But he's not saying anything about intrinsic intelligence. And that's clear from Hilchos Yisrael HaTorah. Yes. Well, Yisrael HaTorah, in Hilchos Yisrael HaTorah, Hilchos Yisodei HaTorah, it's in chapter 5, at the end, somewhere. I think it's in chapter 5. I'll find it for you afterwards. Do we have a Rambam anymore down here? Problem with moving all the Sforum upstairs is that no one's ever going to read them, okay? And they're never going to be here when I need them. I put it in respect to the librarian. No, there's no halacha here anymore. It's just chumash. Nothing wrong with chumash, but I need some Torah Shebaal Peh. Okay, fine.
We'll bring the bed down.
No.
Why not? That whole
show. No, she's not saying no. She's saying no, there's nothing on there.
Oh, no.
Yeah, no, there's nothing on there. No. Okay, fine, forget it. No, someone had a question, but then I must go on. Yeah.
It seems to me that the system of teaching women simply the halacha that they need to know is exactly what they're concerned about, teaching women a little bit of knowledge without any real.
No, because if you teach women the halacha and say, just do this and don't do any, if you have any other questions, come and ask me. So they're going to do this and they're going to come and ask. They're not going to extrapolate. They're going to just do what you told them to do. If you teach women, this is the halacha, and of course, once you know that, now you can work out all the other situations which are similar to this, then you're going to have an extrapolation process which is going to lead everybody off the wrong way. Anyway, we're only halfway through this, and I need to be able to get to the next bit, because the next bit is very important. The Chida, who was a very major Sephardi posek in the 18th century, asked some very fundamental questions on the Rambam. In this big source in number 20. And I'm not going to read it all inside because it's a bit late in the day for long sources, but he basically asked the following. He says, look, number one, the halacha is not normally like Rabbi Eliezer. When Rabbi Eliezer disagrees with somebody else, the rules of psak say that we don't paskin like Rabbi Eliezer. He's called a shamuti, he's a beis shamai nik, he has all sorts of background and baggage as to where Rabbi Eliezer has a problem. He was put in Cherem, and we know Paskin like him. So he says, why is the Rambam, because Machlokes ben Azai and Rabbi Eliezer, why is the Rambam Paskin like Rabbi Eliezer? Now, the truth is that there are other sources where other Tanaim seem to support Rabbi Eliezer, so you could answer that anyway. But then he asks a question from Matthias, and he says, and the truth is, like I said before, all through the ages, people have been teaching their daughters Torah on an individual level. And he quotes Bruri. Now, Bruri, of course, met with a very nasty end. What happened to Bruria? Bruria ended up being seduced by one of the Talmidim of Rebbe Meir, her husband was Rebbe Meir, and she ended up having an affair with one of the Talmidim, and she committed suicide. Okay? That's the story of Bruria. And therefore the story of Bruria had a very unhappy ending. Now, do you read the ending into the scenario and say, oh, you see what happens when women learn Torah? Or have you two got nothing to do with each other? You know? So you could ask that question, but it's not just Brewery, it's other people as well. So he asked some fundamental questions on the Rambam, and at the end he says the following. Go to the bottom of source number 20. Yeah. On page 3. Let's just pick it up here. And he says we can't, because of what happened to Brewery, we can't make a rule for everybody else. So just two lines up from the bottom. L'chein perish and Rambam, the perish divrei tiflus. What does tiflus mean? What does the women, don't teach women Torah because they'll bring it to tiflus? Haynu she'ein m'chuvenet l'ilmoy. The Rambam says that they're not attuned. M'chuvenet. What does m'chuvenet mean? Kavana. M'chuven. Kivun. Intention. But kivun also means directed and focused towards learning. Okay. Elamotia divrei Torah divrei havai. But with Bruria, he says the answer is with Bruria, Shehikiroba. It was clear from her, they recognized in her, Shehaisa Kavanasa Lilmoy, she was Mukhuvenes, she was able to learn properly, Bacholiba with her mind, Vagadal Sikhla, and Vagodal Sikhla with her enormous intelligence, Lakachlanduha, that's why they taught her Torah. And the way the Chida wants to learn the Rambam is like this, and this is very important. The Chida wants to learn the Rambam is saying like this. Most women are uneducated. Now, of course, it's a self-fulfilling prophecy. They're uneducated because you don't teach them. That's, and therefore you can't teach them because they're uneducated. But anyway, the fact that the Matthias was, throughout most of
from the last couple of thousand years, most women have been, generally speaking, uneducated. And therefore, Roiv Nashim, he said, Roiv Nashim, most women are not attuned to learn Torah. The Chida wants to learn, but of course, if you end up with a group of women or an individual woman who clearly is motivated and educated and does have the ability to learn Torah, then Gesund to hate. Then the Rambam wasn't talking about her. And therefore, he's basically kind of pushed the Rambam into a little bit of a corner. And he said that the Rambam's talking about the majority case. The Rambam's talking about a metzias. He's talking about a reality. He's not being proscriptive. He's being descriptive. Or rather prescriptive, not proscriptive. He's not being prescriptive. He's being descriptive. He's saying, since most women can't learn, therefore most women shouldn't learn. Now, by the way, with men, I don't have a choice, because men have a chiyuv. So even if my students are thick, I have to try and teach them Gemara. Now, there comes a point, that even with a man, as we saw, when they're really abusing the learning, so they have to, you don't have to teach them anymore. You have to kick some guys out of yeshiva. There is such a halacha. Because they're just not because they're being naughty, but because they just can't learn Torah. It's not good for them. But in the most cases, I don't. But with women, it's only going to be an individual thing. And therefore, it turns out that, look in source number 22, the Prisha, who is a 17th century commentator, on the same wording of the Rambam, which is brought down by the Tur, says like this, if they roiv nashim einu dasam mechuvenes, aval im lamda la'atma, if a woman comes to learn by herself, and this is what Beth was talking about before, anuroyim, we can see, she got some meharoyim, she's taken herself out from the majority. Ulekach kasav le'el, she yesh laschar, therefore she has a reward. What does that mean? Im lamda Torah, if you are able to teach this particular woman Torah, al mukhovana, she ain't a motzila dibri havai, she won't turn it into nonsense. Aval ha'av, ain't rishar alamda, but generally speaking, a father should not teach a girl Torah, dil matoitzi divarel dibri havai, because most cases will be negative. Ki hu ainu yodea, because he doesn't know, masha beliba, what's in her brain, what's in her heart. And therefore, the preacher wants to restrict this case to a general rule. He says, the Rambam is saying, I shouldn't have an indiscriminate women's educational program, because most women won't take that the right way. But individual women who will take it the right way, then there's no question at all that I'm allowed to teach them Torah. That way, we've explained that the Rambam actually is not prescribing and prohibiting all kinds of teaching Torah to women. He's only giving us a general advice, he's giving a general rule for most women. Now, when you bring this up to speed in the 20th century, you end up with a new scenario. And this is very important. Even the Aruch HaShulchan, who was living in the 19th century, the end of the 19th century, he writes in Lithuania, he writes that our women don't even read the Hebrew. They don't even learn from a book. And he's not critical. He's saying this is how we teach women Torah. Women aren't taught to learn Hebrew, he says. Women are taught halakha from, you know, Russian sources or Yiddish sources or whatever. They're not taught anything from a sefer, even Chumash, anything. He wasn't Chassidish, he was a Litvak. And, you know, they're very big Yorei Shamayim. They come and ask if they need to know something. They don't try and pass anything for themselves. And they know what they don't know, and they come and ask when they need to know something. That's how he said. This was the general situation going into the 20th century. The women in 18th and 19th century Eastern Europe were generally speaking illiterate in Hebrew. That was the general situation. By the beginning of the 20th century, things had begun to change. That women had already become much more educated in secular studies, but remained illiterate in Hebrew. And therefore what you ended up with is a situation where the women were actually now very educated, more and more so, but we were still just as excluded, if you like, from the Talmud Torah because of this approach of the Rambam. Therefore came along the Chofetz Chaim and said, you know something, this is not right anymore. Because the whole halacha of the Rambam is it's talking to a group of women who are not educated. But if you're talking to a group of women who are educated, then this halacha doesn't apply. The Rambam's halacha just doesn't apply here. And what's more, if you don't teach Torah to these women, said the Chofetz Chaim, then they're just going to take the obvious conclusion from that, is that Torah doesn't want me. You know, in physics, in chemistry, in biology, in Russian and literature and whatever else, then I'm treated like an intellectual peer. And in Torah, I'm taught Yiddish stories, and my brothers go and they learn Torah, and I don't. And therefore, at the beginning of the 20th century, there was a mass exodus of women, especially women, from Judaism in Eastern Europe. Because the men were all learning, 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 and the women were saying, I don't need any of this. Sora Schneer stepped into that world in the 1920s and decided to launch the Beit Yaakov movement. The majority of the rabbinic leadership of the time was very opposed to it, because it was a radical break with the way things were done. But the Chofetz Chaim was in favour, and the Gerber Rebbe was in favour. And Sora Schneer won the day, basically, and established the Beit Yaakov movement. Now, once you have the Beit Yaakov movement, what do they teach in the Beit Yaakov schools? Certainly Chumash. And by the way, what they teach now is not what they always used to teach. They teach more and more and more and more. But the fact that they teach Chumash and Meforashim and Hashkofa, Maharal, and this and that, means that they're obviously not following this Rambam, because the Rambam clearly turned around and said it's also to teach women Chumash. And the Shulchan Aruch said it's also to teach women Chumash. If you taught them b'di'evet, then okay, you didn't do too much damage. So it's clear that the set of the Beit Yaakov movement is not according to this Rambam for the reason the Chofetz Chaim gave. And therefore what you end up with is the world that we inhabit today, which is, if you like, a post-Chofetz Chaim world, where this halacha doesn't apply in the same way as it used to do to anybody, because of the educational level. Now, then you end up with, but women can't learn tomorrow. Mm-hmm. But why not? Where did you draw that line? Because, you know, I've seen, you know, people start to write, are women allowed to learn tomorrow? No, it's also, they quote the Shulchan Aruch. Excuse me, the Shulchan Aruch says also to learn Chumash as well. We're obviously not passing like that Shulchan Aruch, otherwise they wouldn't be learning Chumash either. And therefore, according to many people, the Gemara issue has become a non-issue as well. And really what's happened now is the Gemara issue has become a hashkafic issue, not really a halachic issue. The places that don't learn Gemara not because it's awesome for them to learn Gemara, but because it kind of sends out the wrong signals. Because learning Gemara is seen as being a bit of a feminist thing to do, it's got a bit of an agenda, it's got a lot of baggage, yeah, and people perceive it that way. I want to learn Gemara because I want to be like man, you know, that kind of stuff. Now, of course, not everybody perceives it that way, and not everybody does it for that reason. In fact, most people probably don't do it for that reason. But because it has that connotation in some people's ears, so they said, we won't learn Gemara. But it's extremely difficult to put a halachic reason on that, because of everything that we've said. Because we're not following this Pesach of the Shulchan Aruch for the reasons that we've talked about. And that's one of the reasons why Rav Soloveitchik and others clearly held that in the Chofetz Chaim world, where people had a high school diploma, so they should learn Chumash. In the modern world, where women have postdoctorate qualifications and are leaders of every area of industry and science and academia, then they should have the equivalent ability to go into the equivalent level of academic study of Torah as well. So they shouldn't think, Chas V'Shalom, that the outside world has an intellectual study to offer, but Torah has nothing to offer. And therefore, that's one of the reasons why many people feel that there's no reason why they shouldn't learn the Gemara. Now, although the hashkafic issues still are there, and if someone really does want to learn Gemara because they want to be like the men, then there is a hashkafic problem with that, whatever it is, never mind learning for anything. Yes?
This is a question more about the way Rambam perceives world at the time.
Yes.
And I didn't perfect that. What I take from it is that he perceives that while most women aren't educated, it's sort of cyclical, so most women aren't educated, therefore don't teach them Torah because they might take it in the wrong way.
Yeah.
But it doesn't sound like he's very bothered by this, most women aren't educated. Like, he also wasn't giving them any credit for being able to understand, learn, absorb Torah appropriately.
Yeah, but they're exempt from this particular mitzvah of Torah. So why should the Rambam feel the need to bring them in and the unhappiness that they're not in? Any more than if women weren't shaking lulav all over the world, the Rambam wouldn't get upset about that either.
So to the Rambam, it was not at all, he wasn't even commenting about their intelligence. It was totally
I don't believe so. Maybe I'm being apologetic towards the Rambam, but I don't believe so. But the world in which the Rambam lived was such a radically different world in terms of the way men and women interacted.
Yeah, but are we allowed to say that? Like, he also lived in a world where no one was educated.
No, but you're asking me about the attitudes of the Rambam towards women. I'm saying that the attitudes of the Rambam towards women may have been something which is very entirely contextualized at the time. The halakhic issue is a separate issue. It should have nothing to do with the Rambam's attitude towards women. You're asking me about his attitude. I don't know about his attitude. Ask a sociologist, a social historian, what the attitudes towards women were in Egypt in the 12th century. I would have thought not terribly egalitarian.
No, sure not.
But what's that got to do with this?
No.
I don't think it's anything to do with this directly. Yes?
I can still understand how someone, like, from like, let's say the Rambam's view that women shouldn't, like, be educated in that way, like, how you would even know your, like, the halachas and your role, and, like, I don't know, it's just, like... It's,
no, because halachas are halachas, you have to know halachas.
Yeah, but...
Your role in life.
Like, I don't know, like, it's, like, how you actually... Be like a
you see, the
fact
that you're, but the fact that you're even asking this, you're a product of your own education.
Yeah.
You can't imagine having access to an information base or a way of life without having sat in some kind of an environment and been taught it. That is a product of the 20th century.
Yeah. No, but they had it from their house.
They had it. They and women. I don't think you can turn around and say that. Well, you can say what you like, but I'm not sure how reasonable it will be to say that women for thousands of years felt unfulfilled in Judaism. And only in the 20th century do they now feel that Judaism... I don't think that was the case. Although there are recorded examples of women who did feel very unhappy. There's a Gentle is a separate issue. Let's not bring Barbara Streisand into the... But there were other people, Rebbetzin Reina Batya, who was the rabbinit of the Chofetz Chaim, of the Netziv, who was the Rosh Shiva of Volozhin. She was an enormous Talmud Chacham in her own right, and she expressed enormous frustration that wasn't being taken seriously, and that all these young schnips of the Rabbonim are saying Shelo Yasani Isha, and she can wipe the floor with them in Gemara, and they're still saying Shelo Yasani Isha, and she's not. She's saying Shelo Yasani Kitzoyma.
What does she want?
It's a whole other story. So you can look at her Rebbetzin Reina Batya. Her son, her nephew. I want to read you one source, and then we have 10 minutes, but we really need them. The source. One second. Source 23 is by the Orach HaShulchan's son, who is the one who wrote about his auntie. He wrote a book called the Makor Baruch, where he writes about his uncle the Netziv. There was an English book called My Uncle the Netziv. Ever heard of it?
Yeah.
Was an interesting book. It got banned for all sorts of interesting reasons. But anyway, it was based on the Hebrew Makor Baruch, but he writes about his auntie and uncle, and he writes about his auntie's frustrations. Now, this is not from that book. This is from his commentary on Chumash. Look what he's in number 23. So, on the topic of women's exemption from Talmud Torah, he says, I want to bring you a very ancient source here, Kara HaMatzias and Nikra, HaNikra Ma'ayan Ganim. This particular source, Umachabroi Rav Shmuel, Rabbi Chanan Yaakov Har Kavlati, yeah, something like that, from the 16th century. Majakosav al Ishir Chachama, the woman is clever. Achas, the Nidon Heter, Talmud Torah Nashim, in terms of learning Torah, women learning Torah. But Zelashonon, this is what he says. Umama Chachamim, Kol Hamalamed is Bithay Torah, Kiinu Malamed Tiflas. When it says in the Gemara, says the 16th century source, that anyone who teaches his daughter Torah is as if he taught her Tiflas. Here's where it says it. It's where the father is teaching a small child. Amnan hanashim, but women, asher nadav libon, okay, oisano likarva el hamalocha, melechet Hashem, but women who say, I want to learn Torah, women who have matured and they say, I want to learn Torah for all the right reasons, mitzad b'chirasan, because they've chosen to, they have a toiv, v'mashe hu toiv, they want good because of what it is, let them go up to the mountain of God, and let them dwell in his holy place, because they are amazing women, he says. And it's the duty of all the rabbis of the generation to encourage them, and to praise them, and to help them. He says here clearly, that not only is it a neutral thing, but if a woman comes along, he brings a 16th century source, who is capable and willing and excited about learning Torah, then she should be praised and encouraged and etc., etc., etc. Now, it's good to bring a 16th century source, because it can't be apologetics, because there's nothing to apologize for. It's always difficult to bring a 20th century source, which says, yeah, women are fantastic, because you always wonder whether they're saying that just to keep everybody quiet. Yeah? It's like Shalom Sani Isha. And you always have to be careful about apologetics. There are people that write on this in great detail. But I want you to do it on the subject of apologetics, and you may say that Rav Hirsch is coming from slightly this agenda, but Rav Hirsch does something which is very brilliant, which although it may be coming from the point of view that he's speaking to a secular audience and dealing with that issue, he makes a very, very, very good point. Look over on page 5. And he puts like this. Every single thing we've just said about women's exemption, women's exclusion, and the modern day scenario, the entire discussion was on the verse, V'limadetem otam et b'neichem. because women are exempted, because it's Beneichem and not Benatechem, etc. Says Rav Hirsch, but look, number 24. There's a mitzvah for your children. Says the Gemara in Kiddushin, number 25. It's the words of Torah should be sharp in your mouth. You should know what's your im yishalacha, because if someone asks you davar something, al tagamgen, don't stutter and stammer and say, and tomeloi, and then tell him. Elo'omeloi miyad. You should have Torah at your fingertips. You should have Torah right there. Now, this is different from Vilimanatem. Vilimanatem is much more the academic study of Torah, the philosophy and the structure and the background of Torah. The Shinatan of Anecha is to have Torah right here, sharp, shame, from the word shame meaning the tooth. Says Rav Hirsch, an interesting thing. The Chazal, when he talks about Vanecha in this mitzvah in 26, says V'shinantam levanecha, Elu Talmidecha. These are your Talmidim. In other words, not only does Vanecha not have the restrictive definition of children, of sons rather, but it has the expansive inclusion of people who aren't even your children at all. They are your Talmidim. And Rav Hirsch makes the following point in number 27. The Gemara attaches in vain, Beneichem, Beloi Benatechem, whereby the duty of teaching Torah will be restricted to sons and exclude daughters, to Vilimanitem Atam, it's Beneichem, and not to Vishinatam of Anecha. As a matter of fact, women are not only to be directed to the scientific, are only not to be directed to the scientific study of the law. Says Rav Hirsch, it's only Vilimanitem which women have some kind of peripheral connection with. But the understanding of the Jewish scripture and the knowledge of the Torah, knowing the Torah, having it at your fingertips, that leads to a conscientious fulfilling of a Jewish life. And he's not just talking about keeping halacha. He's talking about Torah, knowing the mitzvahs, knowing this whole body of understanding, belong to the education and intellect and feelings of our daughters as much as of our sons. And therefore, Rav Hirsch makes a very strong halachic point, which is you can ignore everything that we've just said up until this point on the Shinatam of Anecha.
But what happens in Shinatam translate?
The Shinatam of Anecha means you have an obligation to learn the whole Torah. You have to teach it to your Vanecha. Vanecha
means.
So one of them is only on sons and one of them is everybody, but the difference between the mitzvahs, the mitzvahs is Vilimanatam Asam is Vanecha is more the academic, theoretical study of Torah. But the Shinatam of Anecha is your obligation to know the whole Torah forwards and backwards.
Doesn't that relate?
No. You don't need to sit in the Meir Yeshiva and learn three lines of Gemara for a week and a half, 8 hours a day.
No.
So, in fact, on the contrary, if you do that, you're less likely to have the Shinatan of Anecha. But you do have an obligation to have the Torah at your fingertips, and therefore you have to do a lot of learning and a lot of teaching in order to know that.
So, can you say what the
Limanitem
meant again? Teach.
Limanitem is the word it means to teach. But the mitzvah of Limanitem is talking about the academic, theoretical study of Torah. Now, what comes out from this, I don't have any time, I've got 2 minutes, I don't want to keep you over. What comes out from this is that the whole conversation about women's Torah learning, leaving aside everything we said about the modern day scenario, is irrelevant to the Shinatan of Anecha. And all of them also relevant for Hodatam. For Hodatam is the obligation to communicate Hashkofa from one generation to the next. Remember what happened at Sinai, remember what it means to be Jewish. There's never been a suggestion that there's any exemption or gender-specific issue there at all. It's clearly an obligation on everybody to learn the Hashkofas of Judaism, to be able to pass those down in an authentic and applicable way to the next generation. So what I've tried to show you in this little discussion for the last hour is, in a nutshell, that of the three mitzvahs of Talmud Torah, two out of three don't seem to be gender-specific at all. The third, Vilimanatem Atam, which is the main discussion, seems to bring with it some kind of a discouragement of women learning Torah, but the approach of almost all of the Orthodox world in the 20th century has been that no longer applies, for all the reasons that we've discussed. And therefore, the division between learning Chumash and learning Gemara, at the end of the day, halachically, will need to be seen as an artificial one. And hashgafically, that's really where the action is. We're this, we're that, we're Haredi, we're modern Orthodox, we're religious Zionists, which has got very little to do with the halacha. Having said that, I know some very big poskim, when asked, can women learn Gemara, say no, and quote the Shulchan Aruch. And I don't understand them. I've never had the chance to take it up with them, but I don't understand them. I don't understand how this Gemara is an Issa on learning Gemara, because this is Shulchan Aruch, this is on learning Gemara, because it's also an Issa on learning Chumash. And it seems that we, as the Chofetz Chaim said, we don't really follow it today. If I can try. I can try, but I probably won't get any FaceTime with them to actually deal with it. But I'd like to see what they say about it. Okay, let's leave it there for now. And we'll continue maybe next week with a share a little bit earlier than normal.